Bonk!
Dan!
Toilet time!
Toilet time!
It's exciting times in the ways of a homeowner.
That's right.
We were just looking at a toilet seconds before this.
We were all gathering around the toilet like how people used to gather around the radio back in olden times.
Yeah, yeah, or a campfire or something, you know. Well, I guess they had toilets in olden times too. Or a pot. It would just be like a pot sometimes.
Yes, but I use the radio metaphor because that was what people would gather around.
As the entertainment. Sit around here, the radio plays.
That's kind of what we were doing as we waited for the water to rise very slowly. Too slowly.
It's a slow burn. You know, we see movies for this podcast and everything, and sometimes it's a slow burn. It's not always whiz-bang every second. Sometimes you got to let it simmer.
Right. But those are written to be that way. And this is something's going on with the toilet that makes it rise really, really slowly.
Who are you to question the creative instincts of St. Thomas Creations, the maker of our toilet?
Well, I'm not gonna question St. Thomas. I mean, he's a saint. Who am I? He's the saint of toilets.
That's a good point. You know, I was looking up, as I'm just trying to figure out what the fuck lever or whatever do I have to buy or replace. And
is it lever or lever? Are those two different things?
Typically people say lever more, but like I always hear it as in like levers and pulleys, and I think I like saying lever more.
Okay, that's fine. I just didn't know if they were two different things.
Same thing, same spelling, same everything.
You know what word I like?
Which one?
Piston.
I thought you were going to say pissant.
No.
Piston.
I don't
Piston's
like that
good.
Word.
You don't
I
like
do
piston?
Like piston, yeah.
Okay, well, pissant isn't actually like a piss thing.
I know that.
Okay, but pistons definitely aren't.
I'm just saying I don't like the sound of that word, pissant, but, and I like the sound piston.
But it's just the sound of it, right? Because it's like a car thing, and I know you're not a car person.
Well, I like thinking about them, you know, metal tubes going up and down. Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I just realized the hand motion I did to illustrate a piston could be suggestive of something else.
Well, we're not going to go there.
No, we're not. Back to toilets. When I was looking up the lever situation, mm-hmm. like, what the fuck? There's the weird floaty ball thing. There's this Fluid Master thing that doesn't seem to be in any other toilet YouTube video I'm seeing or whatever. Everything is like, okay, your toilet's probably a Toto or a Kohler. Mm-hmm. And I saw those words and I was like, oh, I feel like my eyes have seen those on toilets before. Yeah. That makes sense. So I go to check if we're a Toto or a Kohler. And no, we're a St. Thomas Creations.
That's right.
So
It's unfortunate that like Toto hasn't attained the level of ubiquity that like Jell-O has, where Jell-O and like Kleenex are just like stand-ins for the actual item. Because I feel like Toto, imagine if we referred to the toilet as a Toto. That would be so great. And I feel like it just works well too, like how puppies, the word puppies, like it evokes what a puppy is, even if you didn't know what puppies meant. If you were new to learning the English language, if you heard the word puppy,
sure.
and then you realized that it meant a baby dog, like there's no,
it's like, oh, that checks out.
That's just the most perfect word to describe a baby dog. And I feel like Toto is the perfect word to describe a toilet.
It's good, but my knee-jerk reaction to that is negative, because I think I have that reaction to the word Toto because, being from Kansas, the two things you always hear whenever you're not in Kansas and you show a Kansas ID, mm-hmm. or say you're from Kansas is, not in Kansas anymore,
that's
or,
right.
Where's Toto?
Yeah.
So I think for me, it just falls under the category of lame Wizard of Oz reference, because that's the only reference anyone knows to Kansas.
That makes sense, you being from Kansas. For me, it's, hold the line, love isn't always on time.
Oh, that's good
no,
stuff.
No.
We're going to get DMCA'd here. Jeez. But no, I'm with you. Toto works in the same way that like a portable toilet, you know, is a port-a-john or a port-a-potty. Mm-hmm. I think those are like fun ways to say that. Mm-hmm. And Toto is more fun than toilet.
And Kohler, I know about Kohler. I've heard of Kohler, the bold look of Kohler, of course. Mm. But I typically associate with like sinks and faucets with Kohler more than toilets.
Oh, so they're an all-around ceramic put-it-in-your-house company.
Yeah, I don't think it. I think it's more just like appliances involving water, I guess.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Plumbing adjacent things.
Yeah. When we were redoing the kitchen, our contractor wanted me to choose a new sink. I ended up just keeping the old sink that we had. Kind of wish we replaced the sink. I mean, we were going all out. We might as well have done that. But they were so expensive. So it was like, this one's fine.
Sure.
But there's some nice sinks out there.
Yeah.
But I do love our faucet. We have probably the greatest kitchen faucet I've ever seen. It's majestic.
It's elaborate, I would say.
It's very industrial. It like shows you the inside of it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It opens up the trench coat. You can peek down through the kimono, whatever.
It costs extra to get the trench coat on the...
It's a tiny little trench coat. It's really cute. Yep, it was specifically tailored for this faucet.
Waterproof.
Of course it's waterproof. Yeah. Isn't it interesting that flashers tend to wear trench coats all the time?
I mean, it makes sense,
but I feel like they could also just wear like really loose gym shorts and just flop their junk out of there. And then that'd be easier for a getaway because everyone suspects the man in a trench coat.
Sure.
No one suspects the man in basketball shorts or whatever.
But my thought is that I think we're just talking about the depiction of flashers in things such as Gremlins 2 and other media, mm-hmm. you know, in movies and stuff. Because I feel like you don't hear about flashers a lot, or at least not that term. Mm-hmm. I mean, some weird guy whacking off on a train in San Francisco, mm-hmm. that happens all the fucking time. We've seen that happen.
Oh, it happened to me.
Remember,
I was in Dunkin' Donuts, minding my own business.
That was in New York.
Yeah, this was in New York City. And my ritual was during lunchtime, when I worked at an office, I would go to Dunkin' Donuts, I would get a coffee, I would have a snack, and I would play solitaire on my phone. And I was doing that, completely minding my own business. And this gentleman sitting cat-a-corner from me, you know how you could just feel when people are looking at you?
Yeah.
I felt him looking at me, and I glanced up to confirm my suspicions that he was looking at me. Not only was he looking at me, but he was jerking off this bizarrely long, weirdly thin, like pencil-like penis and just staring at me. And then I gathered my stuff, and I went down, and I told, because it was like, Dunkin' Donuts had like the sitting area was on the second floor. And I told the manager, I was like, there's a guy jerking off up there.
Yeah. And I remember I called and talked to the guy too. And, you know, obviously there's only so much you can do in a situation like that. But it's like, okay, let's give a full description and not let this motherfucker in the place again.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time it was like, it was gross and it made me uncomfortable. And I thought it was like, oh, just only in New York. Right. But like in retrospect, it's really weird. And I mean, yeah, I knew it was really weird, but it's
criminal.
It makes you feel really, really bad as the person it happens to.
I'm sure.
So if you're out there listening and you've ever had an inclination to jerk off in public, don't.
No.
Because it's gross and you just make people really uncomfortable and potentially scar them. So don't do it.
Go to your bedroom and
lock the door, light some candles, play some Shaka Khan. I don't know.
Very specific. Yes, I think we can take a firm don't whack off in public.
That's it. We're taking a stance on PTS.
Yes.
Don't whack off in public.
Yes, that's our platform. Boy, how do we segue from that?
We were talking about toilets naturally.
Right, but how do we segue from that to the show?
Ah, well, just like that gentleman in Dunkin' Donuts was whacking off his penis, there's a lot of demon heads whacked off in season 4 of Castlevania.
I'll take it. Expertly done. Jeez, that old, you know, that's actually the example they teach in, like, you know, filmmaking podcasting courses about, like, that is the textbook example of a segue is from whacking off to Castlevania.
Well, I can't take credit for it. I read about it in a Rand McNally textbook when I was in college in a short film class. That was actually a whole section devoted to specifically that analogy. So.
Rand McNally? The map people?
Isn't that a like textbook maker?
They make maps, but I mean, hey, I had no idea they make textbooks about podcasting too.
They made textbooks, but the map thing, yeah, that sounds right. Maybe textbooks, I'm not sure, but I don't know. I don't remember the specific manufacturer.
Well, they made the map to, you know, a transition is just getting from one place to another, and mm-hmm. Rand McNally mapped out the way to make that transition to Castlevania.
They're the master of segues, of literal segues, if you think about it.
There you go.
You want to get to the store. Well, the way to get there is to take this road. We took a road to get to the topic of Castlevania Season 4.
And we're here now.
And now we're here.
We've arrived at our destination. The GPS shut off, and we're here. Thanks,
Rand. And as always, wasn't the journey even more fun than the destination? I'm kidding. It's a really good season of television.
it's super duper good.
It's better than our conversations about toilets and public masturbation.
It's a high bar we've set. It is a really, really good season.
Yeah, this show has been awesome. Dan, I don't know if you noticed, but season 4 is the last season of Castlevania.
Yes, and it feels like it was wrapped up. And like, I feel like so many shows, even ones that I've enjoyed quite a bit, like don't know when to throw in the towel mm-hmm. or whatever. And that's why I really have an appreciation for shows that stick the landing.
Yes.
You know, I feel like Breaking Bad did that.
Absolutely.
You know, they could have stuck around and been the biggest show on TV for 3 more years, but they wanted to end the story when it made sense. And,
yeah, yeah. And it's really a shame when really good shows, instead of ending when they should decide to, you know, prolong it and just milk it for all it's worth. Like Dexter is a great example of
oh,
that.
Oh, sure, sure.
Oh my God, the last few seasons were just absolutely atrocious.
I threw in the towel around 5. I don't know if I made it through all of 5. I think I made it through all of 5 and started 6 and was like, I'm good. 24 fell off a cliff at one point. I know what you mean. It's disappointing to be so invested in things. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, there's these loose ends, but like they either never got, wrapped up, or they got dragged out so long that you don't mm-hmm. care anymore. Instead of like hitting at the apex,
yeah. Or there's also that rare situation where the show should have gotten a few more seasons. Like I feel like Game of Thrones is a great example of that.
Sure, sure.
Like Game of Thrones, you know, a lot of people criticize the last 2 seasons, and rightly so. But I don't necessarily have a problem with what happened. I really like the idea sure. of like spoilers for Game of Thrones if you haven't seen it. I really like the idea of Daenerys kind of losing her mind and succumbing to the, you know, her blood, sure. the tendency of her blood and stuff like that, and all that. But it was so crammed together that it all happened so rapidly, and like the war with the Nightwalkers happened in one fucking episode. That was the whole season. The whole show was building up to this. There were so many plot lines that were just never addressed.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back on the first season, someone's adventure, someone's journey from one location to another location would span multiple episodes.
Oh, yeah. Like, whole books would be like, okay, they're just trying to get to this place.
Yeah.
You know?
And then in the final season, people were zip-zapping all over the goddamn place, and there was no, like, insight into what would go on during those journeys to places. They completely did away with that. I mean, it's all been said before about Game of Thrones. I really like what happened. I just hate how it happened.
Sure.
I feel like they could have used another, like, 3 seasons, you know?
Yeah, yeah, or at least, like, really dragged out, or, like, had a normal length for that last one and mm-hmm. everything. Like, yeah, I think I agree with you, for sure.
Yeah, but anyway, this show, great, kind of in line with your Breaking Bad assessment there. I feel like it really stuck the landing. It stood around as long as it should have, and it served it well, for sure.
Yeah, and, like, I love how the first season was, like, the short season, and we got to see enough of Dracula to kind of, like...
That's right. The first season was really short.
It was, like, four episodes, yeah. Because I remember when we said we were going to do episode 2, thinking it was 4 episodes, and then we're like, oh, okay, we've got, like, a bunch more episodes
season
to watch.
Season 2, yeah.
Season 2. So we see enough of Dracula in the first season to kind of build him up and everything, and then it makes it a big deal at the end of season 2 when he gets killed. I remember mm-hmm. that was awesome, like, the storming the castle thing with... the music playing, mm-hmm. everything was incredible. Bloody tears. And then now he's been gone enough to where it's like we're kind of missing him. And now he's kind of looming over this season because mm-hmm. it seems like several different players here are trying to resurrect Dracula and Lisa.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows 2 women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Yeah, yeah. Now you remind me of season 2. I remember feeling like, well, now that Dracula is gone, like, where is the show going to go? I mean, they did build up, like, Carmilla a lot mm-hmm. in that season and stuff.
Season 3, yeah.
Well, she was first introduced in season 2.
Right,
like, part
and
of
she takes
Dracula's
over.
War Council, yeah. And, season 3, I feel like season 3 was kind of a lot of table setting. I mean, they had the, I forgot the name of the city where that cult, where the Legion thing happened.
Is that Targaviste?
Was that Targa Vista?
The place where there was the judge who had all the kids
right.
killed, and there's a
right.
tower and everything. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And that's the one where, like, I think, is it Isaac starts building his, like, night creature army? So, like,
right,
they're building all that stuff.
And Isaac, at that point, is, like, dead set on avenging Dracula. And that's kind of where it picks up in this season with his stuff. Although, we kind of see him, like, we don't spend a ton of time with Isaac in this season, but the time that we do get with him is, like, pretty... it moves his story forward quite quickly. Like, we see him. I really like the scene where he's interacting with one of his demons.
Fly's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he asks him to like eat a strawberry or something, mm-hmm. some kind of berry. And the guy was like, ah, I don't want to. I just want to feast on human flesh or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ends up eating it. And he's just like, he just says like memories, you know, he's just overcome because obviously these night creatures, they used to be humans.
Yeah,
you know what I
yeah.
mean? I thought that was so interesting and kind of moving. And we just kind of see his feelings on humanity evolve where like he is perfectly justified in hating humanity, but he does not want to see everything, you know, the whole world collapse, all of humanity suffer. And so that change of heart, you know, makes it toward a little bit later in the season when he goes to Carmilla's castle and invades with all his night creatures, why he ends up sparing Hector and Lenore and just focusing on Carmilla, who at this point has like her goals have just exploded into world domination. Now she wants to rule the world,
not even making like any bones about it. Right. There's that scene where she's just like, here's a map, I want all this stuff.
That whole monologue about old white guys ruling everything, which is kind of funny.
And her like sweet like vampire lady crew, which I do like how the other members of the crew are kind of like looking at her a lot here and just being like, I don't know. Like there's the other two, Striga and what's the other one's name? Marana.
Yeah,
where they're kind of off in the field mm-hmm. and there's a lot of conversations between them about like, yeah, Carmilla's kind of fucking nuts.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And Lenore sees that as well. And Lenore is especially in an interesting position in the season because, you know, her role where like Striga is more about like battles and stuff like that, and Carmilla is obviously like kind of the grand strategist. Lenore's was more about like diplomacy. And now that it's just going to be all out war, she's wondering what her place is in all of this. But ultimately, the other vampire sisters kind of start to recognize that like if Carmilla's wish is fulfilled here, considering how long their lives are as vampires, it's just going to be nonstop war until like forever. I mean, they're just going to be constantly dealing with not only the war, but like supply lines and just all this war management is just gonna, they're not going to be able to enjoy anything.
There's no point where they're like satiated with like, you know, the conquesting like the land and feeding off of humans and like literally, you know, feeding. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's really cool just seeing Carmilla just be so blinded by her aspirations to control the entire world.
Yeah.
She's a great villain in this.
She is a great villain. And it really does a good job of towing that line where it's like she is a great villain and she's clearly kind of becoming corrupted by the idea of power. But a lot of what she's saying, too, is kind of like kind of agree with her about a lot of stuff. I mean, she's obviously evil and out of her mind, but she makes a decent argument. I really like the scene where Striga and Marana are like at camp.
Yes.
And it's like kind of daybreak and they hear like a bunch of humans coming to attack them. And it being daytime, well, vampires can't go out in the day. But Striga puts on this fucking day armor. It's so cool.
I'm not typically a huge, I don't necessarily notice like armor and stuff like that as much as a lot of people. But this one, it was just like, it was unavoidable how fucking cool this was. It looked like Nightmare almost from Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
And then what happens afterwards where she goes out there, you know, shielded safely from the sun and just fucks up. Everybody is incredible.
It's like all she has to do is just drop her giant sword on them and they just are cut like to use the quote from Commando, like a knife through warm butter. But yeah, because they're not soldiers, they're just regular like farmers and village people. And
yeah.
And once she goes back and is talking with Marana about it, about like, you know, they weren't people that are like prepared for battle. There's just people desperately trying to defend their town and their village and their farms.
It might as well be like a Dynasty Warriors fight where you're like, you're the only character against like 100 NPCs that are just like, you know, level negative 100, you know, but you're the super powered guy with a sword, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So they kind of start to have a change of heart about stuff there as well. Before Carmilla calls him back to the castle. The whole Vampire Sisters arc of this season is really good.
Yeah, and it's not just like, here's the supervillain crew. It's like every single one of them has their own personality and their own motivations and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was the thing, like while I was watching the season, I think I struggled a bit to figure out, okay, what do they want? Okay, this person wants to resurrect Dracula. This person wants to kill. Like, I kind of struggled with it, but like, you know, I was reading up on the season before we did this podcast, and it's pretty clear, like, now that I read it, but did you have any trouble following that? Because, like, I would be like, okay, so Varney wants to resurrect Dracula. I don't really remember why. It just seems like he's kind of into the whole Dracula thing, and he's trying to get his, like, he's got his one buddy, Ratko, which they built him up to be a really big deal and then just job him out immediately, you know?
Yeah, well, I get what you're saying. There's a lot of, like, different plot lines going on in the season, and all the different characters have their own motivations. But I think, in a way, like, you're not necessarily supposed to have everything perfectly filed in your head as to what is going on, because at the end of the season, all those plot lines kind of come together at once, especially around, like, I feel like episode 8 is when, like, everything starts to come together and you realize, like, oh, they were working together, but this person's actually fucking over this person and manipulating this person, blah, blah, blah.
Or a thing that you saw 4 episodes ago, now in a different light, is like, oh, they were getting, you know, bamboozled here. They got buffaloed.
Right, exactly. Yeah, a lot of buffaloing going on. But I know, like, put simply, that Hector, Varney, Ratko, what's the Russian?
Ratko.
And obviously Isaac and Saint Germain, they are all kind of, well, I don't know if Isaac wants to resurrect Dracula, but I know Hector does.
Hector does, yeah.
They're all trying to figure out, kind of work together to resurrect Dracula.
And Saint Germain wants to do it specifically because he wants to resurrect his wife, which we learned in the last, that's why he was trying to find the infinite corridor and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, because, like, I thought he went into it at the end of 3. Mm-hmm. I think he did. But then we have this whole, like, backstory episode where we see what happened to him, I think, in there. And he met this, like, alchemist lady, we think, and she's kind of saying, like, oh, you need to sacrifice all of your morals and everything, and to get here you need to, I don't think she says you need to resurrect Dracula. I think she tricks him into saying, like, you need to build this rebus, which is, like, made of corpses of, like, half man, half woman, and resurrected. So I don't feel like throughout the season Saint Germain understood that he was resurrecting Dracula, but he did agree to, like, you know, not even think about the morals of the situation and just, like, I just have to do this.
Yeah, his goal was just to find his wife or his lover who's lost in the infinite corridor, which seems like a shitty place to be lost in.
Yeah, that seems like an easy place to get lost. You could use a Rand McNally.
You ever, like, no clip through a wall in a video game?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just everything's repeating and
it's,
like,
awesome.
It's awesome, but it's horrifying in a way. It always kind of scares me.
The idea of, like, if it happened, like, it seems unnatural.
Yeah, like when you're just surrounded by nothing but, like, gray or white or whatever.
Or you can see, like, I remember doing it in, like, Doom and stuff like that, where you could actually see the monster closet, like, where they're holding all of the, like, they're just kind of in there just doing their loops before they spawn, you know, just like, bringing in the memory before. You know, that stuff is fascinating. It's like you would accidentally get these peeks into how games were made unintentionally because it glitched out and it's like, oh, wait, oh, so they're all actually spawned in there, and then it just, like, moves them over. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I love getting that peek behind the curtain. But yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like, really, you know, it seems like there's a lot of different layers. It's almost like a layered sandwich of different universes, and you could just step through it, and then in the middle it's all twisted and weird, and there's just things floating
MC
everywhere.
Escher type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a really good comparison. But yeah, so this alchemist is like, oh, you have to become an asshole and then you can resurrect her.
And he's still kind of likable, like, even as he's, like, you the viewer knows, like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, he never does, like, a full, like, heel turn or anything. I think he was just, like, so blinded by, like, oh, I just need to bring her back, and he was tricked into doing shitty things.
Yeah, know? And he did sacrifice his morals, like, completely. Like, he kills someone to get this key. He, when he's confronting Trevor and stuff in Dracula's castle at the end of it, which we'll get to, he's like, doesn't care that a bunch of people will die. But ultimately, he does kind of save the day in a way.
It's interesting because, like, we're talking about the motivations for all these different characters, and I think the three that have the least defined motivations for most of the season are the three, like, leads, Trevor, Sypha, and Alucard. Mm-hmm. Like, Trevor and Sypha, for, like, the first half of the season, are kind of just wandering the countryside fighting monsters, you know? Lots of great fight scenes, awesome fight scenes, but I felt like there wasn't a, like, super clear thing that they were going after. Mm-hmm. And Alucard, I feel like, was just, like, being sad in a castle, you know?
Yeah, well, Alucard, like, if you remember from the previous season, he was kind of taken advantage of by those two people who he was training. And
yes.
They kind of tried to kill him, and he super killed them quite easily because he's, you know, Dracula's son.
That'll do it.
But in the beginning of the season, like, when someone writes him a letter that's like, oh, to the Alucard of the castle, he's starting to recognize that, like, there's this expectation that, like, being the son of Dracula, residing in Dracula's castle, like, it kind of seems like a bit of an identity crisis. Like, he doesn't want to turn into a Dracula type figure himself, but sure. He doesn't know where his place is too, because he also has that, you know, obviously the piece of humanity inside him that was absent from his father. And I think he kind of finds a sense of purpose when that village kind of calls upon him for help, when that person, the dead corpse on the horse, comes toward him and requests his help with, you know, all those demons that are attacking the city at night, or the village, yeah, or whatever. But yeah, I think he's just kind of struggling for a purpose. And I think that, like, Trevor and Sypha are definitely, like, kind of aimless until they find, or they return to Targo Vista and see, you know, all the crazy shit that's happening there with everything destroyed and every, like, the few people that are able to survive these constant demon attacks just starving or not knowing how to take care of themselves at all.
Yeah, that's probably, I think, some of the weaker parts of the season is, like, I think that subplot of the, like, underground resistance, and I forget the name of the character that they meet.
Zamfir,
yeah. I did like the thing of, like, she's kind of, like, got this delusion of, like, oh, it's for the king and queen, and they're just, like, skeletons and thrones, you know. That was pretty cool, but I don't know. Maybe I'm complaining too much about it, because it's not like it takes up whole episodes, mm-hmm, but anytime they went down there, I think I don't like just, like, underground sewery type subplots, mm-hmm, you know, like when I play, like, the Metro games or any, like, you know, Fallout going into the sewer systems. I just find it, I think, visually uninteresting, typically. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why that didn't ring as super exciting to me.
Well, I feel like sewer levels in video games, they generally always try to misdirect the player. Like, there's always an element of it being some kind of labyrinth, because everything, yeah, looks the same and it's all, like, a narrow passageway. So it's very easy to get lost, and a lot of frustration is born from that, so I could see why you have that association.
And also, like, NES games and 16-bit games too, anytime there was a sewer level, there'd frequently be, like, the water is green and hurts you if you touch it, so it's like, ah, fuck, I gotta, like, jump on all these stupid floating, yeah, things and poison water and stuff.
One of my least favorite sewer levels was in Final Fantasy XII, because it's one of those deals where you have to, like, oh, this switch will open this bridge but close this one, and this one will do that. So you have to, like, figure out how to get to where you're going, and it's, sure, a lot of backtracking. And
I feel like a lot of Resident Evils have that too, where it's like, okay, here's the 45 minutes I gotta fart around in the sewers, you know. It's like, I never like that.
Yeah, but the water treatment facility in Half-Life is fucking awesome though.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Half-Life's good.
Yeah, it's a good game.
Hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I really like the part where at one point Varney calls Isaac on the magic mirror thing, and Isaac straight up blocks the number. Yeah. Where he, like, tells the mirror, he's like, do not accept from this location. It's like, he just blocked the caller.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in retrospect to me that Death disguised himself as Varney, like, the most horrible, obnoxious guy. Like, not only does he suck and he's an asshole and he's gross, but people are always commenting on how bad he smells.
Yeah, it's like, you're the most obvious. Like, you'd think if you're trying to, like, if you were some unearthly death demon thing, or just death itself, yeah, you'd try to be a little more nondescript.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about death in a bit, because that was, man, that really did it for me. Mm-hmm. Before we get there, there's some stuff with Hector and Lenore where Hector kind of, like, imprisons her with magic and cuts off his own finger, mm-hmm, frees himself from that. But that's kind of, like, as everything is convening on the castle.
Yeah.
And that's when Isaac gets there with his night creatures.
On Carmilla's castle.
On Carmilla's castle, yeah. And there's, like, this energy dome that goes around. Uh-huh. And they have this fight with Carmilla.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, you mentioned earlier about, like, not necessarily knowing what's going on in the beginning. We see Hector placing those little stones all around, like, hiding them, but in, like, little crevices and stuff like that. And it turns out that that was, like, part of the spell. So he was kind of plotting at some point to either escape or take over or something with a, you know, I probably intended on chopping off his finger. So,
sure.
But yeah, that was really awesome. The fight between Isaac and Carmilla was so fucking cool. Mm-hmm. It was really cool to finally see, because I feel like we haven't actually seen Carmilla, you know, fight, you know?
When I think of that character, I always just picture her, like, on top of a thing, like, plotting on a map or looking out, yeah, over horizon and talking about motivation. Like, I never see her, like, dashing around with a sword or anything like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool to see.
And she's awesome.
She's awesome. She, at one point, like, right before the fight starts, she's, like, really pissed off. She has this giant, like, kind of like boardroom table. It looks like it's probably like 2 tons. She just like whips it out of the way like it's nothing with one hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great fight. All of Hector's demons are attacking her and stuff, and she's just making short work of it. By the end of it, she's in literally like an actual pool of blood.
Like, yeah, like the whole ground of this like blood energy dome.
Yeah, it's like the, you mentioned Resident Evil, it's like the basement in Resident Evil 8 with like the blood on the ground. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, it was just so fitting. Such a cool last place for her to fight. What a cool way to go out for that character. Right. And she kills herself. She's kind of like, fuck you. Like, and she says something along the lines of like, I'm going to be in hell and I'm going to fuck you up when you come down there.
Yeah, you know? I'm going to figure out if you can die twice.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. It's like, man, just what a cool ass character, you know?
Yeah, that was really neat. Yeah, it was, you know, it was like kind of the first time in the season that like a good guy like won kind of cleanly, right? Mm. I mean, like Isaac tells Hector that, like, you know, he's sparing Hector, he's sparing Lenore, and he's, you know, has kind of a renewed hope for humanity. He's going to go start his own kingdom, and it's like kind of hopeful. It kind of puts a punctuation on that whole the Vampire Sisters storyline.
Yeah, yeah, it was super awesome. And at that point when she died, I kind of assumed like, okay, we've got like 2 or 3 episodes left at this point. I was like, okay, so now the big bad is coming back. Like, they're going to bring Dracula back, mm-hmm. and that's going to be the big final fight. And, like, the fact that I thought that, it makes it pretty clear to me that, like, that is the obvious thing. Mm-hmm. I think most people would have expected that, like, okay, now she's gone, it's got to be Dracula. Because what mm-hmm. else, you know, is there? But then what they actually do with it is so much cooler, mm-hmm. I think. They do bring Dracula back, kind of, but in, like, the most fucked up, ill-advised way you could imagine.
Yeah, it's it turns out that Varney is actually Death in disguise.
Yeah, Death itself, which, you know, because you haven't played a lot of the Castlevania games, and you watched some of this here at home when I was still in Kansas, mm-hmm. and you were texting me like, oh, is Death a big part of the Castlevania mm-hmm. games? Like, oh, dude, the Grim Reaper and Death, like, that is absolutely, like, in Symphony, he's one of the first characters you talk to. And
well, so, I noticed that, like, a lot of the bosses in the show are, like, references to bosses from the game.
Yeah, or big creatures. Like, there was a big fight outside the castle where, you remember the big, like, kind of elephant-y
dinosaur
thing.
Oh, he looks like a giant
thing.
Fucking penis monster.
Yeah, with like no skin on the front, no eyes, and like that's from Symphony. Like, a ton of the visual designs are like, oh, that's from Symphony. Even when you find out that Saint Germain has been taking all the souls uh-huh. of people who died, and it's like in that like neon pink ball of faces. Mm-hmm. That's totally a thing. I've killed 400 of those things.
Well, you
in
know
Symphony
what?
Of the Night.
Symphony of the Night is the only Castlevania game I played, but I guess it didn't really have much of an impact. I played it like when it first came out on Xbox Live, so that was back when
I played that one. It's a good port. I probably played through that maybe once every like 5 or so years since it came out, and like I think I've said it before probably on one of these podcasts about the show, but I played the NES games. They were always a little too hard for me when I was a kid, and so I never like dove too deep in back then. And then Symphony of the Night came out in like 95 or 96, super early on in the PlayStation's life cycle. I never played it until like 2000 when I was working at Funkoland. So it was like 4 years later. I didn't even know it was this like revered game or anything. And I remember seeing my coworker play it, because back then it wasn't busy at all and we were allowed to play games and it was fucking awesome. It sounds like it's terrible to work there now, but I remember seeing it was the boss fight. It was from the last season, the big like
mm-hmm. the Legion.
Ball. Yeah, Legion. And I remember looking at it and like the sprite, you know, the graphics and everything just being so fucking cool looking mm-hmm. and detailed. And I was like, what is this? I have to play this. And I took it home immediately and I was like, oh, instantly one of my top 10 ever, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I have a real connection to Symphony, and there were a lot of just like, that's the thing that makes this the best video game adaptation ever, I think, is because it is giving you all the things you want as a fan of the series, but in a way that like it never feels crammed in. It's there if you know that, you know, like, you know, I watch that and I know like, oh, that's the thing, that's that enemy, that's this. And you can watch it not knowing that or remembering that, and it's not distracting. Mm-hmm. It fits. It's not shoehorned in. The death thing is fucking sweet for the story of the season and fits right in. And also for me, knowing that that's a big part of the games, mm-hmm. it's masterfully done.
It really is. Yeah, it kind of just takes the game's universe, but doesn't feel like it has to adhere strictly to any of the plots in the games.
Yeah, and at the same time now, with these characters so established and everything, I would be super excited about any 2D Castlevania game at this point, but like I would totally take a like that style of graphics, the classic, you know, Metroidvania Castlevania style, and with these characters, like playing as Trevor, you know, or Alucard, and mm-hmm. that would be fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, I say all the time about like Mortal Kombat being the best video game movie of all time, and I stand by that, which again, low bar, but I do think this is the best video game adaptation,
yeah,
period.
It's fantastic. So Det's plan is to resurrect Dracula and Lisa in this rebus, this hermaphrodite divine being thing. But, you know, knowing that doing so will drive Dracula absolutely insane and make him kind of destroy the whole universe.
Murder the world, murder as he says. World. He's like, yes, murder the world. That is the most evil thing you can say.
That is, yeah, that's really, it's really evil to say that and, like, mean it.
And it's this crazy skeleton saying, yes, murder the world. It's like, this is evil as shit.
Right, and in doing so, he would have, like, a limitless supply of food, essentially.
That's it. All Death wants is more people to die. It's, like, the most evil possible motivation, and he's going about it by, like, tricking all these people just to see them, like, do their bit. Like, it's fucking sweet what they did here.
It's really cool.
Because Death was not only Varney, because at first, Saint Germain, as he's kind of realizing what's going on when he makes the rebus, kind of sees the alchemist that he saw in the Infinite Corridor, and she's like, "Oh, here's who I really am, Varney." And then it's like another Scooby Doo pull off the mask. Ha-ha, I'm Death itself. It's like, fuck, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. And like Frieza, he has multiple stages.
Yes,
and ends up being fucking huge, monstrous. You look at him, and there's just no way Trevor can beat him. I mean, it's a helpless situation.
Well, before that, though, the actual Rebus, when it comes back.
Oh, yeah.
Because they get souls back. We see, like, Dracula and Lisa in hell just being like, hey, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, you're in this fucking thing just screaming.
Screaming,
like,
yeah.
And Dracula at one point is like, I'm powerless to help this. Like, Dracula just being like, fuck, this sucks.
Yeah, they're screaming and, like, writhing in pain. And, like, also there's moments of Lisa being like, this place looks familiar. And then being like, ah!
Yeah. Like, it's just, isn't this your kid's room? Oh, shit.
This hurts so bad.
It just seemed deeply uncomfortable the body is just like, it looks like a crash test dummy with like one side's got a boob and like it's just this fucking crazy stitched up Frankenstein thing. I just remember watching this and being like, man, they really fucking went for it at the end here. Like Death wanting to murder the world and Dracula, like all this shit was so cool at the end.
It was a great climax.
That episode 9 specifically, because the whole like first part of that episode is just every awesome fight scene. Like this show does fight scenes with such style and it really kills it here. So it's a billion great fight scenes with all these different enemies and stuff. Some of them you see from the game, and then cut to the crazy resurrection stuff. And then there's all the stuff with like the big fight, basically, which you were talking about.
Right. Yeah. It seems like a helpless situation, obviously. And Trevor is face to face with this thing. And I don't like there's stuff with like the special sword that he has, like a special magical sword and stuff like that.
I was reading that they touched on that early on in the series, and I kind of remember some glowing sword stuff or whatever. But yeah, I didn't quite follow that. Also, we should mention he kills the Rebus. He throws holy water at it, slashes it, or he like does a cross thing, and then like you see the face of Dracula and Lisa like fly out, like their souls fly out, and I thought that was cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
And just as he's about to hit Death with the killing blow, Saint Germain, in the nick of time, opens up the Infinite Corridor again. And we don't exactly see what happens. It's kind of assumed that that Trevor dies in this giant explosion. But then in the subsequent episode, not long into it, we see that he's actually alive. He managed to survive it. I presume he went through the Infinite Corridor when Saint Germain opened
it. I think that's what they say, is that Saint Germain, like in his last gasp or whatever, helped him through.
Right. Okay. Right. They do say it. Right.
Yeah. But the actual fight itself, the way it's animated, is the most final boss fight shit you can imagine. Like, he's jumping off floating like I feel like I've done Ninja Gaiden boss fights that are like this, where it's just like this huge thing, or the bad guy grows to 20 stories tall.
It's like a Nemesis in Returnal.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I love those type of fights where it's just like, it's just crazy vortex storm stuff in the background and floating platforms. And it's just, it looked so cool. There's one shot that I thought they were going to go out on, but the fight kept going, where it's just like him, you see the back of Trevor and you see Death just looming so fucking huge in the background. I'm like, that's a desktop wallpaper. That looks cool as hell. God damn, that looked good.
Yeah, it was really awesome. The fight scenes are they always look just fantastic in this show.
With clever things. Like, do you remember early on when Sypha does the, like, ice wheel thing where she, like, makes this, like, water thing around her and then, like, spins this ice wheel or whatever and chops all these guys in half? And, like, so many things where people are just getting split open, but it's happening, like, one after another. Right. And you're just like, whoa, 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 you know, without any time to actually, like, reflect on it.
Yeah, it's great. And not to mention just, like, the design of all the demons. I mean, obviously, it's heavily influenced by the video games, but, like, they don't all look like the same, like, grumbling, you know, black black colored beasts. No. Like they all look different. It's so cool.
I think that's part of why I love Castlevania. It's like I was never necessarily that drawn to like kind of, you know, vampire castle type horror aesthetics or anything like that. But I kind of liked how Castlevania was just this weird hodgepodge of all these different styles. Like, wait, why are there these like, you know, Greek statue heads flying around, but then there's a straight up Frankenstein's monster, and then there's werewolves, and it just seemed like this crazy like mixing of every mm-hmm. horror trope imaginable in this one big evil castle. Mm-hmm. And it made it really fun because like there was so much variety.
Yeah.
And the show captures that entirely.
Yeah. It's kind of a nice ending. Alucard decides to create like a village around his mm-hmm. castle, so he kind of finds peace there, and they're going to call the village Belmont.
Yeah.
Turns out Scythe is pregnant and wants to name the kid Trefor. I don't remember if that was joked about or what.
Yeah, when near the end, like when Trevor is about to die, and he's like, Trefor is a bad name. I was like, was there a conversation I missed? Was this a deleted scene?
Yeah, I mean, it is a really bad name.
It is.
And I don't think she ends up calling it Trefor. No. But they find out that he's alive and all is well. But then we find out that Dracula and Lisa are in their own bodies on Earth.
They're incognito and just like hanging out in an inn, and they're like,
incognito.
Okay,
Dracula's like 8 feet tall and has these giant nails, and he's like white as a ghost.
It's like when Gary Oldman and Bram Stoker like goes to town, he's got those like round glasses and a top hat, and you're Dracula in a top hat. I know you're Dracula. You're so Dracula. I love to Lenore. She's kind of resigned to everything at the end there. And she tells Hector, she's like, I guess I'll go check out this sun thing.
Yeah.
And she looks at it and she's like, meh, and then just dies.
She just puffs into a puff of smoke. And she's like,
I thought that was kind of great.
Yeah, that was great. Hopefully Dracula won't turn out to be such an asshole now that Lisa's alive again and he doesn't have a reason to hate humanity.
Yeah.
I thought that the season ended just perfectly because it's like great conclusion to the show. But it's not entirely like we don't know exactly what's going to happen with Dracula and Lisa, right? Like we don't know what they're going to do or whatever. So there's still some questions that linger, but it's just a fantastic way to end the show.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing is like I don't. If they announced a season 5 at this point with the characters, I think I'd be bummed because it's like, no, this is good. This is how I want, you know, a climactic battle with death itself.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like you wrapped up all this stuff. You know, if they want to keep doing a show with this crew and team with tell a mm-hmm. different Castlevania mm-hmm. story, sure. But like, let's have the Trevor and Alucard and all that story be done because like, wrap it up with a bow. It was perfect,
yeah,
you know?
It was really fantastic show.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I just can't get over those last couple episodes. Mm. I remember just watching that ninth episode and being like, motherfucker, they are just all cylinders right now, yeah. Like right at the end of the show.
Good.
It's stuff. Really good. Really, really good stuff. I was about to tell you to check it out if you haven't, but if you are, you know, this far into a podcast about the final season of a TV show, I would imagine you've decided if you're going to watch it or not, but you probably should have watched it by now. So hope you all enjoyed it as much as we did because killer, killer show. And if you didn't hear our episodes, if you're a new listener to Painting the Stream, you can go back and we did episodes on seasons 1, 2, and 3 as well. So we have the full series run there. So thanks for listening. If you've followed us the whole time or if you're new, welcome.
Thank you.
And also if you're new, we do a Patreon. And we want to give a special shout out to everyone who is a patron here.
Gotta love those patrons.
I love that Razor now knows the word Patreon because whenever I say Patreon, he gets up from his nap and is like, okay, we're almost done. So it's we keep it real simple. It's $1 $5 tier.
That's
it gives you ad-free episodes.
Wow.
Gives you early access to episodes Saturday instead of Sunday.
Wow.
It gets you access to our Discord. Over 800 folks in there right now. It's a very active, cool, fun place.
It's like a lovely little internet city. Dan's the mayor and everyone's happy and really friendly to each other, and it's just a great place to be.
It's just a good time. I check in there every day, see what people are chatting about. People play games together and everything. It's just a great little community there. But most importantly, if you sign up for our Patreon, you get written for you personally by Bonk. It's a Bonk-who.
That's right, Dan.
Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do.
Who do we have?
This week, we are honoring our friend Kenny.
Kenny!
Kenny, 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 Kenny.
Kenny.
Kenny, 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 Kenny. This Bonk-who is for you. Hmm. The mouth of Kenny was an all-consuming force that swallowed the world.
That's Seems very fitting. Did you mean for that to seem Castlevania-esque?
Well, now I realize that it does work.
Just talking about death trying to get the world murdered. So Kenny, turns out, he went from Dracula to Kenny. That's what the next Castlevania season's about, is death trying to get Kenny.
That's death's final form.
Yep. Not really Kenny. Well, thank you, Kenny, and thanks to all of our patrons. We have a new thing now where you can just sign up for a year. You know, you like the podcast and you want to hang on and hang out as a patron for a year, you'll save 15%.
Thanks for 15%.
Say 15% if you do a year up front. But thanks to everyone, whether you're a patron or not. Glad to have you here. We had a fun time talking about and watching this show.
We did.
Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thank you, brother.
Give us the old 5 stars in the Apple Podcast if you feel so inclined. I think I'm out of things to say. I think that's the end of the show.
Well, then why don't you say bye?
I thought we were going to say doing it. I'll fix it in post.
Okay. Why don't we say
goodbye?
Bye.
Next week. Bye.